and welcome to the UK and Ireland Minnesota Vikings Fan Club podcast. I am your host and co-president, Mr. Richard Dawson, and I am joined by my presidential amigos, vice president and all-round nice guy, Mr. John McDonald, and co-president and, yeah, go on then, also Mr. Nice Guy, Reese Field. But we've also got on tonight Mr. Darren Hales, who is going to go through our draft picks. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, gentlemen.
There we go. In on the action. We are going to talk tonight about the Vikings draft, how we have got on, how we got on day one. Did we have to forfeit both of our draft picks to get up and get who we needed, or what did we manage to cling on to? And then obviously draft day, the rest of the draft, see what happened. And did anyone make some crazy draft picks during day one? Let's find out. Draft day one review. Let's go. So draft day one, who stayed up for it? Come on, guys, who stayed up for it?
Me.
Yeah, all the way. I was there at the hippodrome.
I woke up for it.
Yeah, I was up all night. It's too exciting, is draft day, because you've spent weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks hearing and reading about prospects and who's going to do what and who needs what and needy this and blah, blah, blah. You can't switch off. You need to listen to all of it. And I really enjoy myself. I love the theatre of the draft, because you just, especially in recent times now, they started moving it around city to city. I think it's a quality piece of broadcasting. Everyone gets really hyped and excited for it. And of course they have to, because these kids are going to earn millions and millions of dollars over the next 4 years. So you've sort of got to give them a good platform for them to launch off of. And the most obvious draft in the history of obvious drafts from pick one, super obvious, Caleb Williams going to the Bears, which I think we all expected, didn't we, gents?
Yeah,
of course. Yeah,
you stick £1,000. You stick £1,000 on it, you would have got £1,000. Well, £1,005 back.
Yeah, just the most obvious draft pick in the history of draft picks. And then that's where it sort of captured us after that. Reese, just take us through the next two or three picks in the draft.
For some of us, it wasn't a surprise. Jaden Daniels going number two. For others, we saw him slipping to 11. He didn't slip to 11. He went at number two. Number three, there were a few suitors for Drake May. The Patriots had to turn down a couple of tasty offers, one from New York and one from ourselves. We did offer the farm. We offered the two first round picks we had. We offered next year's first round pick. And there was, a swap of change involved as well, but it wasn't enough. And the Patriots stuck to their guns and took Drake May before, the obvious landslide of wide receivers and offensive linemen.
Hang on. Let's just go back to this pick three, because is that a confirmed report that we tried to trade up? Is it confirmed reports that New York tried to trade up? I get it. We're going to go on to who we eventually drafted. And I think we all know who we eventually drafted. But I've not heard anything from Kevin O'Connell, from Kwesi afterwards, to say we tried to get that top three pick and it just didn't work. But then again, you wouldn't say that, would you? You wouldn't say, we had to go with plan B or C or D. You would say, this is what happened. And I don't know. I've since read some stuff afterwards about Drake May, and he was absolute, by far for me, he was the guy. And I still think if he was that guy, and we'd have said, two first next year, third and a pick swap, and New England went, throw in someone else. I don't believe that they would have listened and fielded offers up to that amount, and it was not quite enough to get over the line. I feel like they would have just said yes to something. But John, what do you think? Were we ever in for pick three? Was it ever confounded?
Yeah, again, he was the guy. He was the perfect solution. He always was the perfect solution, but we can't give up everything for him. We tried our best. Our best wasn't good enough. I don't think the Vikings want to come out and say, okay, we settled. So that's not the confidence you want to put in the court, your future quarterback. You want to come out and say you settled, but I think that's what we did.
Yeah, a bit of an odd one, really, because, like I say, I just don't know how much more we could have offered. If the Patriots were saying we were open to business, that's the business, really, isn't it? I mean, Darren, would you have offered much more for pick three?
No, I wouldn't have. I'm also not convinced that the Patriots were ever really truly open for business. I think they were saying those things just to see if someone came in with an absolutely astronomically stupid offer. But, you know, the two first round picks this year, next round's first round pick, some change from maybe a third or fourth round next year has been talked about for weeks and weeks. And the reports that came out from the Patriots beat writers, it was the same offer that we've been talking about for weeks. So I can't see why that's changed. I think it was just and that, you know, what the Vikings offered, was that really tonight or on the night, I should say, or were they just referring to offers that had been discussed historically over the last few weeks and months? I think they were always planning to stick and pick, but left that door just a crack open to see if someone came in with something ridiculous and that they just couldn't turn down.
Yeah, it's an odd one as well, because on the night, I was expecting them to use their full 10 minutes, keep the line open, see if anyone does come in with a crazy offer. But then you start to send signals out to Drake May. If no one comes in with an offer and you draft him, you're basically saying, I waited 10 minutes for someone to give me a better offer than you and no one did. And that's for Drake May's confidence. You know, that could be an absolute shot in the foot. But I don't know, it came in pretty quick. I think it was in within 5 minutes they were on the clock by the time they got their pick in. So I think they were pretty settled on what they wanted to do. It just doesn't come up every year. A draft class this deep in quarterbacks just doesn't come up every year. That is a fact. And I think they identified their man and they went for him. And you know, congratulations to them. Is he going to be any good for the next 2 or 3 years with no one to throw to? Probably not. But he might have a bit of time to sit and they might get some capital in the next draft to help him out. So, yeah, well done for sticking to the guns. And well done to the Vikings, because I think anything more than that would have been a massive overpay. And the deal we eventually did, I think, represents, well, a countless more value to the Vikings long term than potentially trading the farm for Drake May for what they potentially would have wanted. But Reese, something very odd happened at pick 8. Come on, tell us, give us a lowdown. What happened at pick 8?
Well, it's not about the draft pick. It's about what the draft pick represents, isn't it? And that's exactly what happened in Atlanta. Because after signing Kirk Cousins to a very, let's say, expensive, lot of guaranteed money, 4-year deal, they went out and they took a quarterback in the draft, Michael Penix Jr., who I liked. And, you know, throughout this process, I've sort of made it clear I was a big fan of his. I was a bit higher on him as the prospect of like a day one start and then McCarthy. McCarthy needs time to grow, but we'll touch on that later. But yeah, they went quarterback in Atlanta and threw everyone off. I thought they'd go for, you know, maybe a Dallas Turner, you know, best defensive player in the draft, Byron Murphy, something, a need of theirs somewhere else in defense. But no, they decided to give Kirk Cousins absolutely no new weapons.
Some would say madness, some would say genius, because maybe they're going to Frankenstein their quarterbacks and make one decent, healthy one out of both of them, because we know Penix has had his injury problems throughout college, and we know that Mr. Kirk Cousins himself is not healthy yet, coming off the back of an Achilles tear. You know, maybe it is this new technology of putting people together and Frankenstein in a quarterback, or maybe it's just, I read something earlier, Kirk's going to play all the Sunday games and Penix's going to play everything in prime time. It absolutely insane. I say that, and on the night, I was a flabbergasted. Tom Pelissero came over and says, attacking Penix. And I was like, no, this is just draft speak, getting us all drawn back into the draft, because there's a couple of standard wide receiver picks that had gone beforehand, and everyone was like, yeah, we knew that was going to happen. And he was like, oh, we're going to take Penix. Yeah, really funny. And then they bloody did. They just announced it. Yeah, Penix at number 8. Darren, what's your thoughts on the matter?
So initially on the night, like you, I was bewildered and confused. I just got over the New York Giants pick, where, you know, that was where you're expecting is a quarterback going to go or not, and they went with Neighbours, and I was like, okay, everything else now just smooth sailing. And then yes, the reports came out about Penix. What confuses me about that pick, not only the fact that they've taken a quarterback, but the fact that they've taken Penix, who's what, you know, one of the older quarterbacks that were available. So knowing that they've got Cousins there guaranteed for 2 years and then another $10 million in the bag for that third year, he's going to be 27 before he's starting. Add on top of that, they've taken the one that has the most injury history. Just doesn't seem, you would have thought they would have taken one of the younger kids. If, you know, taking a quarterback at that point to sit behind an experienced quarterback like Cousins for 2 years makes sense. It's not the most stupid thing, especially when you've got a quarterback class like we had this year and potentially looking at next year and the year after being nowhere near. But just taking Penix, who's going to be 27, has the injuries, just that's the bit that confuses me more now, having digested it after the initial night of it taking place. But yeah, good luck to them.
Yeah, it's an odd one. On the left hand, it's an odd one. And on the right hand, it's genius, because you're right. Penix is going to be 27, 28. In fact, it gives me a bit of confidence that if I declare for the draft next year, I might be able to sit behind someone and get a game in a couple of years' time. But it's crazy. You're never going to get a starting quarterback at 28. That's just, you've ruined all of your chance of having that longevity of a cheap quarterback for a few years and then an easy first contract. And then it just doesn't make any sense. But then you think, and we went back, if you go all the way back to, I don't know, episode 10 of our podcast, where we're all saying, ooh, we need Kirk just to sign a really team-friendly deal so that we can sit there for 2 years and we can have a quarterback learn the scheme and he's going to come in like Jordan Love. That's what we all said it, and that's what we all wanted. And now we're saying that Atlanta is stupid for doing the same thing? I don't know. I don't buy it. Do I buy it? I'm still confused. I've had very little sleep over the past few days listening and watching this draft and traveling up and down the country, and I'm still very confused. And I don't know if it's the lack of sleep or whether it's my actual judgment on the draft, but Reese, are you confused? Does this make sense?
The only way I can justify doing what they did when they did is that they're expecting to lose a first-round pick for tampering next year, and they won't be able to go quarterback next year. There's no other way that I can justify this. The Kirk Cousins deal is not team-friendly in the slightest. It's $50 million a year for the next 2 years for starters. You know, it's bonkers to think you go take a quarterback in this situation. And, you know, the people who are probably laughing, you know, the Chicago Bears are laughing. They might have thought Roma Dunze was going, you know, another top wide receiver prospect. And then they've been able to give their quarterback a weapon in Chicago. And we're laughing because we've got a quarterback that we were worried we were going to have to pay more, trade up for, give up that extra first round pick for. And we've had to give up change to go up and get our future quarterback. John, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, as everyone says, I can see the thoughts behind the pick, going up there and picking the quarterback, because I think they know they're going to get fined with picks for the whole tampering thing. But just picking Penix that high is that's mind-boggling. We were sitting at the Hippodrome. Absolutely everyone was floored by that pick. Everyone's jaws just were like, what? And if you've seen any of the Atlanta fans' reactions to that pick, their stadium, everyone was just throwing their hats on the floor, walking out in absolute disgust. You've just given Kirk Cousins that amount of money, and then you go and pick a quarterback, Penix, with that pick. It is quite funny to watch their fans' reaction to that.
What was even more funny was Kirk Cousins was in their stadium at their draft party, and no one had told him. It's just everything about it is bizarre. Everything about it is bizarre. But then again, like I say, I'm saying bizarre on one hand. We've said for weeks and weeks, if it's your guy, go up and get him. doesn't matter. The draft pick won't mean anything in 2 years' time when they're winning Super Bowls or getting into playoffs and all. You know, that's what we've been saying. So it feels almost hypocritical for us to criticize the Falcons. But then again, not hypocritical at all, because they've taken two quarterbacks, neither of which have got excellent health records. Well, Kirk Cousins only recently, but he's an aging person with now a health concern. I don't know. Again, it takes a very, very brave GM to explain to the owner of the Atlanta Falcons why he's just spent $180 million on Kirk Cousins and then an eighth pick in the first round of the draft on another quarterback. It's very brave, either very brave or very stupid. And as you say, Darren, it just threw a hand grenade into the draft, because we were all expecting a quarterback to go really at six, because we know that, again, as saying, that Daniel Jones is not the long-term solution at quarterback at the Giants. So we thought, yeah, they're going to definitely take one of the top six. Then we might be on to plan C. Kwesi must have balls of steel, because he sat there thinking, no, I am not going up any further. I've now got a plan that I have to stick to. And it just fell into our lap. And I don't really know how, because like I say, as soon as you get past the Giants, you know that the quarterback needy teams are all gone. The only people that's going to trade up is either us, the Broncos, or the Raiders. And the Raiders were really an outside shot at trading up. So it was us or the Broncos. And the Broncos had nothing to trade up with. And if they did, then they had nothing for years, because they were in cap hell, no picks. It just didn't make sense for them to really trade up. Darren, what happened? How did it plan out? What panned out on the night? How did we get to pick 10?
Well, so as you say, with the Neighbours thing, I think the Giants media, whether, you know, the leaks into the media about them potentially looking for a QB was probably a little bit of gamesmanship. I think they were trying to convince either the Vikings, the Broncos, or the Raiders to trade up to four or five and pay the farm for it, just to push one of those wide receivers further down the pick into their lap. I think that was their plan. Obviously, that didn't happen. Like you say, Kwesi clearly had, you know, big kahunas, because, you know, to sit there and wait it and call their bluff, basically, and say, you know, it's not going to happen. I don't believe you're going to do it. We're just going to sit pat. Was basically the skill involved in that, you know, from their front office and knowing that and getting that intel, if you like. So I think it was, you know, it was a good plan by the Vikings front office and Kwesi. There's a bit, obviously, then it got to 10. Atlanta threw something into the mix and threw the cat amongst the pigeons with their pick. But, you know, there's still two good, well, one good and one, from my perspective anyway, one backup plan. And it really was a backup plan in Knicks. But then there was a complaint about us pushing up to 10. But I kind of understand going into that 10. You've still got those other two behind you. You've now got, with Penix going, you've now got one less quarterback to take. And you know that the Jets were going, I think Daniel Jeremiah on the night said, don't be surprised if they trade up by one, because the Jets will be on the phone to them saying, even if they haven't, saying, we've got this from one of the other two above you. If you want to guarantee it, you're going to have to come in. I think they might have paid a little bit over for that, but I get it. Again, it's for a quarterback, so I don't blame them for that. I know some people have got a little bit upset about that, thinking we should have just stayed and sat at 11, but I don't think you can take that risk at that point. So, yeah, I think, you know, the fact that we didn't have to give up even our other first round this year, let alone a first round next year, still come away with what a vast majority, or certainly a large chunk of the Vikings fan base would have wanted in a QB. So, yeah, I'm really happy with JJ almost falling into our laps and us only having to take a little step up to get him.
Yeah, I've got 3 points on this, really. One, I feel a little bit vindicated in the fact that I said a quarterback was going to slide and JJ McCarthy slide into 10. I'm going to take that. I'm taking it. No, I don't care, Reese. Don't wear your face like that. No, I'm not having it. I'm taking that as a win. Two, my mate Walter Payton. I don't know if you saw his interview. Sean Payton, what an absolute his whole demeanor around that interview. Ooh, did you see me? I was on the phone and I baited. He didn't. Shut your bloody face, you horrible man. Yeah, I don't buy into anything that he was saying on the night, and he just, his horrible face, didn't like any of that. And the third one, I just think that you've got to have so much more faith in Kwesi going forwards now. People are saying there was a few questions over him, and I don't understand how you can question going up one spot when the result that what we got was a quarterback that we clearly like and that we clearly think we can develop and hang on to next year's first round and pick 23. That's top GM negotiation moves, and almost proud of the fact that he sat there and said, no, this is our plan and this is what we're going to do, because I would have caved. Absolutely, 100% would have caved. I'd have been ringing the Chargers at five and saying, excuse me, can I have your pick, please? So, yeah, he's a better negotiator than I am. John, how did you feel like it played out on the night?
Yeah, it was really interesting watching it, because obviously I was at the Hippodrome with a load of Jets fans, and when we made the trade between each other, it was quite funny. It was just, they were like, oh, what have you given us? Oh, then I don't know if you've seen our recordings from our pick there, that they recorded us and then we recorded their pick. We got a couple of awoogas for their pick, picking up the Fashnu. But yes, I think we've walked away really well from this draft, and you've got to have faith in Kwesi going forward now, because Kwesi did cook that last on that first night. He had the balls to stay with what he believed, and yes, if you told me at the beginning of the night we were going to walk away with Turner and JJ, and we only gave up what we did, I'd have laughed at you, because I was just like, no, there's no way we only give up that little amount for that much.
Ooh, JJ McCarthy. Ooh, JJ McCarthy. We've got a new guy. We've got our new chant. Reese, the stat man Reese, come on, tell us what he's like. Who have we got? JJ McCarthy is the man on everyone's lips, but who is he? Why have we got him? And what's he going to do for the Vikings for the next 4 or 5 years?
You've got a very young quarterback with a lot of room to grow and an absolute cannon of an arm. That's what you've got. That's what you've picked up. One thing I found really interesting was in Kwesi and coach's phone call with JJ McCarthy, was they said, we know we had to leave you there a little while, but that's because we needed the other picks to build around you. We needed to be able to build around you, bring some other guys in around you. And I think that was telling. And the one thing that, of course, when you and I were on talks with Rich, the one thing I said was, I don't want to overpay for JJ McCarthy, because I feel like he's the quarterback that will need more around him to succeed. And we've done everything right in that position. I don't think he slid, really, because once you got past, you know, the Giants, who else actually wanted a quarterback unless they were going to trade up and get him? And no one did trade up, apart from, of course, yeah, Atlanta. Atlanta wanted a quarterback. In our mock drafts, I was the only one who had five quarterbacks going in the first round, and I had Penix going at 23. I mean, I'll give you some credit, Rich. You did draft Fashnu to the Jets. You were the only one who came up with that one. I don't know, yeah, slim pickings there, but I could also claim to be an oracle by saying a quarterback was going to go at number 8, which did happen, I guess. I just didn't expect it to be that way. I'm excited for the JJ McCarthy pick, though, because whilst I have my strong concerns over, has he thrown the ball enough? He's now in the best situation in the NFL for a rookie quarterback to come in and learn, and has, you know, a guy who's been there in front of him as a first round pick in Sam Darnold. You know, he can learn from him. He can learn from Josh McCown, who has worked with, you know, even a quarterback from this draft class and has done it. He's been everywhere in the league. A coach is a former quarterback. You know, there is no reason that the kid can't succeed in Minnesota.
He's lost 3 games since high school. I mean, he's a winner. He's a born winner. And that is not someone who we have had in the building for a long time, I don't think. Someone who can really just say, all I've done on my career is win. I mean, he's only 21, fair enough, but he's played a lot of ball. And I went back and watched a bit of the Michigan tape. I went back and watched a few Michigan interviews, and they were struggling before he came in. And he just seems to pull it out of the bag. That seems to be the overriding feeling and notion that I get from people, that he just pulls it out of the bag in certain situations. He seems to get that first down on three. He seems to get that touchdown just when you need it. He releases the ball really quickly. There was some footage even of Dallas Turner trying to get around the side and trying to take him out, and he just releases the ball really quickly. Like you talked about, he's got a cannon arm. We have got the best situation. He's got a bit of footwork issues. He's got a bit of decision issues. We can coach that. I'm convinced we can coach that. And I'm convinced that we'll be absolutely fine coaching that. And he's deceptively athletic. He's not Jaden Daniels athletic. I don't think we're going to have particular run plays designed for him. And I don't think that's what we would do anyway, because I don't think that's what Kevin O'Connell likes. But if he needs to, he's deceptively athletic, which I think is another real plus point to have in the building. I am excited about it. After Drake May, who only wanted because I thought he was a more finished prospect, and I thought we needed someone to start a bit quicker. But after Drake May, he was the number two quarterback that I wanted. And like I say, tons of upside. And the other thing is that we didn't have to give up pick 23, which didn't actually end up being pick 23 in the end. But I think we've all seen what is now going to be a universal meme for really in what happened in the end. John, tell us what happened and how did it play out the Hippodrome?
Yeah, there were 14 offensive players taken in the first round straight away without one defensive player being taken, and they just kept on. Everyone just kept on taking offensive players. So I think Quasey was just like, "Well, let's just move up a tiny bit and get one of the best defensive players to go with one of the best defensive coaches in the league. He's going to fit in so well with this Flores system. It is unreal." He must have been, Flores must have been licking his lips to get his hands on Turner. He fits his system so well, and he is going to be absolutely amazing for us for the next couple of years. It is so good. And we only gave, okay, we moved up six spots. We gave a lot of later round picks. But everyone's criticised, maybe we gave up a bit too much. Next year's cap space, we've got loads of cap space. We can fill a lot of stuff in free agency. We might be getting some comp picks in the future for Hunter and Cousins. These are the things I think Quasey took into consideration when he made that move.
Total surprise of the night for me, almost as surprising as Penix, because I think everyone had Dallas on their draft board, but only because you have to have all the best players on your draft board, not because you think you're actually going to get them. You know, everyone will have had Caleb Williams on their draft board in case the Bears did something unthinkable. But it seems, I don't know, maybe I'm going to be in the minority, but I think we had more needs in the team. And Darren, I know you've got a slightly difference of opinion on this one. What do you think? Dallas Turner is a good move or maybe not so good move?
So, yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm not. I think given that, like you guys, I would never expect Dallas Turner to have been on the board at 17 anyway. He in my mock drafts, most of the time was going to Atlanta. So as soon as they took someone else, and it changed the landscape. So I get when you've got that quality in one of the premium positions, an edge, then you probably go for it. But I don't think it was necessarily our, you know, I was thinking at that sort of position if we had 23, as anyone that watched the people draft that I did a few weeks ago or that would have seen, is that I was thinking more sort of defensive tackle. I think stuffing that run, having a big bodied, you know, 300 plus pound guy in there, is a big gap that we still have to fill, and I don't think we have done. Cornerback, obviously, or the secondary as a whole is still a pick, but that's in the sense that Dallas wasn't there. The fact that he was there, I get the excitement and the reason to go and get him. You know, if you look at any, we've overpaid for that trade. That's without question by all of the, you know, the various trade value charts that you look at. It's definitely overpaid, but it's a premium position. So again, it doesn't really matter so much. I'm not so worried about that. And, you know, I don't mind the F those picks if it's for players of that caliber. But yeah, it wouldn't have been my first choice given, you know, what I think we need to fill. But as a player, he's a little bit undersized. But as John says, he's built for a Flores system. He's going to be played all over the place, you know. So and he's got that the quickest step I've seen from an edge for a long time. So when he gets off. I kind of half expect quite a few offsides in his early start, but once he gets that sorted, he'll be a very good piece of that defensive jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, I'm sort of the same as you. I was expecting maybe even a trade back, pick up two defensive tackles, you know, really firm up that offensive line. You've got to go for it, though, haven't you? I mean, in the past 2, 3, 4, 5 drafts and free agencies, we have seen massive contracts go to edge rushers, but they are a premium defensive position. You know, if you talk about the quarterback being a premium position for the offense, edge is a premium position for the defense. And like you say, under a B-flow scheme, he might not even play edge. He might play inside linebacker. He might play on the front line. He might start on the front line and end. He could end. It's a bamboozle, and that's the great thing about the B-flow defense. He could play anywhere. You know, Josh Metellus, Swiss Army knife. Josh Metellus doesn't have a position. In fact, they made up a position for him because of the B-flow defense. So it's going to be interesting because we have got some people to get on the field. Van Ginkel, you've got Grenard. Now you've got Dallas Turner. Where are you going to play Cashman? Is Ivan Pace Jr. going to play? Where's Phillips going to play? You know, it's a hodgepodge jigsaw puzzle of a defense. But I think I'd like to think that we've got a plan. Reese, tell us how it's all going to pan out.
It's really interesting that we went and got Turner. Never could have dreamed he'd be there. When we were talking about it, I said, oh, we need a cornerback or a defensive tackle. Like Darren, I felt like the defensive tackle spot was the one that we really needed to fill. But, you know, the best one was taken just before. And so, yeah, I was really expecting it to be, you know, Terry and Arnold or Mitchell. But when he says, oh, Dallas Turner, I was so pumped up. And it offers a lot more flexibility. He's a really good outside rusher. He's got to work a little bit on when he tries to come inside on his block sheds. He will, in the NFL, the tackles will just play to the fact that they know he's going to want to go around the outside. But there is nothing that cannot be fixed by coaching when it comes to these top talents, really. And I have no qualms with the pick. I am very, very happy, and I can't believe that he fell that far. There's no way he should have fell that far. Surely one of these teams, when they're going taking the 5th, 6th, 7th best defensive tackle in the draft, should have thought, maybe we should just take Dallas Turner. But the best thing about it is it gives us a lot more flexibility. Van Ginkel now doesn't have to line up outside. He can line up in the middle. It allows us to rotate Cashman, Pace Jr. a bit more as well. Because, you know, prior to the draft, it looked like, oh, that's our front seven. And barring taking a defensive tackle, that's what it's going to be, and you know who those starting front seven are going to be. Now there's some flexibility, there's some competition, and it will bring out the best in players.
And there's two things I like about this. One, let's not forget how many minutes our defense played last year, and I don't think we're going to turn that around very quickly. You know, we're going to have to play Sam Darnold from the off, and I don't think he is the type of quarterback, unless he has this Baker Mayfield style redemption arc, he's not the type of quarterback that's going to keep our offense on the field minute after minute after minute after minute. Although Jones is going to help with that, and I think he's going to take some minutes off the clock. But also the hunger in his voice, the absolute ferocity in his voice when he wasn't picked top 10. he strutted onto that stage at pick 17 as if a man possessed, and I like it. I think he's the best thing I've heard said about Dallas Turner is that everything he does is violent. And I think we need a bit of that in our team. I think we need a little bit of edge and a little bit of nastiness coming through. And yeah, I like everything about it. Like I say, my initial reaction was trade back and get some defensive line because that's what we need. But like John, like you've said, we've got all that cap space next year. And if Dallas Turner is sat there at 17, you just go get him. It's not a question. You know, you figure out the rest later. Great first round draft. I've seen some people say that we won the draft. I've seen some people say that the Bears won the draft on day one. You know, I've got a caveat that I think some of the teams have made some really good acquisitions later on. But day one, you know, I think we're up there in terms of what happened and how it all panned out and the grade that you would give us on our first day draft. Absolutely incredible. But of course, some other things happened during later days of the draft. We didn't have any draft picks for day two, so we'll skip day two. Might touch on some players that went to some other teams, but day three was where all the action was, and we'll give you our overview of day three coming up. So, miniature confession I've got to make now. We have been sitting on some news for a little bit of time in terms of some activity that we had planned on day three. It's incredible, really. The access that we get to the Vikings and the trust that the Vikings put in us when asking us to get involved in some activities. Darren, I know you were selected to come down and represent the club on the day. Just give us a bit of a rundown on what happened, what we were asked to do.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it was a very interesting and a great, as you say, a great opportunity. But so, yeah, seven or eight of us were sent down to Stonehenge to support them in selecting, doing a pick. Originally, the pick was supposed to be 108. So we had all the guys down there that we sometimes get when the Vikings are over here from the front, from the some PR team, some NFL guys there as well from the broadcasting and the UK media team. So yeah, a bit blowy out there on the and a bit of waiting around, but it was all good fun and everyone was in good spirits and everyone. But yeah, we had a bit of a technical issue with the 108 pick, so we ended up getting involved. And most will have seen, I'm sure, anyone that's been watching the day three draft. We'd have seen some ruffians suddenly appear on the screen at the back of the stage there before the 177 pick. But yeah, it was a great day, and it's always like I say, it's always nice to know that that the Vikings have that trust in us to go out there and represent their club, their organisation when they want to come over here to do stuff in the UK. So it's a it was a great honour, and always a good opportunity to see some of the regular ruffians that frequent this club. So myself included, obviously.
Yeah, I understand why you were describing us as ruffians. I was up at the crack of dawn after watching the draft for two nights in a row, driving 5 hours down Stonehenge, rocking up expecting a full makeup team and got none of it. So I had to put my ridiculous tired face in front of a camera. That's why they stood me at the back, hopefully trying to cut my face out of the shot. But yeah, incredible. And you're right, you know, it didn't go to plan. We were supposed to be announcing 108 and we did have some technical difficulties. And, you know, that's just what happens. Don't work with kids, animals or Vikings fans apparently. But yeah, it was a great day, really good spirits, good to see everyone, and just amazing to be involved. I mean, how many times do you get to be involved in this sort of stuff as a fan and as a club? And you know, some of the guys that came down had been really long-standing members, come to all of our watch parties and events, and you know, just great to get people involved. I'm super proud of the fan club members that came down and represented us and kept us busy. Rob, big thank you to Rob, bringing his shield and doing the voiceover. That was a pre-authorized script by the NFL, and by hook or by crook, he was going to say it exactly as it was written on the card, because we were warned very much so that anything off script would be frowned upon. And thank you to the other Rob that came down as well, who brought a UK hybrid ball down with him, and during the times where we weren't shooting, that kept us occupied throwing a ball around as well, which how many times do you get to play American football around Stonehenge? So yeah, that was pretty fun. Just a great day all round, and like you say, and like people have said, just loads of fun and great to be part of.
For me, that ball was the star of the show, because I didn't see any of this because I was watching on TV. But when you guys got lined up and you were ready to announce the pick, or announce that we were announcing a pick, Rob was holding the ball in hand. But when you've got to do a skull clap, you got to do a skull clap. And that ball dropped so fast. He was like, nope, skull clap right now. And it was fantastic. You see the energy that you all still had after what was a really long day. And I think the best thing about the technical difficulty watching was the crowd in Detroit didn't know that pick 108 was going to be the fan club's pick. But when me watching on my phone and everyone in Detroit saw this guy called Kellogg's walk onto the stage, and they were all like, who the hell is this guy? That's not right. Who's that? I've now sworn off all Kellogg's cereals because I feel like we've had our thunder stolen a little bit there. But honestly, fantastic. And thanks again to everyone in the NFL, inside the Vikings, who made it as possible as it could be, despite the circumstances. And if we ever get the chance again, maybe choose someone with a bit better cell service, shall we say.
Yeah, we're doing it now. UK and Ireland Vikings World Heritage Tour. We're going to go to all the places, take the flag with us, and announce a pick every year. That's the plan. Yeah, like you say, it's just fun. It's just loads of fun. And this is what makes being part of the club and being part of the Vikings really worth it. It was just a really fun day out. So yeah, really privileged to be part of it, and really happy to be involved. But I think we need to get on to what the main reason we were there for, which was the player that we actually managed to draft. At pick 108, we did take Kyrie Jackson, cornerback out of Oregon, which was definitely a need for the team. I don't know too much about him. I don't think there'll be anyone apart from Reese Field, who is college aficionado, that will know too much about these later round picks. Although Darren is giving me the side eye to say that he's involved in this as well. I am not going to even try and say that I knew every late round pick in the draft inside and out, but I knew it was a need, and I'm hoping that it's a good fill in one of those needs. Go on then, Reese, tell us about him.
What was the thing that we really wanted out of a cornerback in this draft? Someone that was big, had some leverage, and could make Byron Murphy go back into playing slot, which he specializes in. That's what we've got here. 6'3" cornerback. It's that sort of Cam Dantzler build, but faster, shall we say. That's he runs a 4.5 40. A lot of people expect him to go faster than that, and I think he probably could go faster than that. He didn't, maybe the pressure got to him. Hopefully that's the only time pressure does get to him. There's always the little hang-ups with rookie cornerbacks. There will be some difficulties. There will be some teaming issues. But he's got that sort of energy of line me up against your best guy. If it's 3rd and 5 and Amon-Ra St. Brown is lined up outside, he's going to want to line up opposite him. He's going to want to get handsy. He's want to be physical. He wants to use his size and his leverage to win early when defending routes. And all the physical traits are there. He's also, can blitz too, which we know B-Flow loves that. So there's a lot of upside in this pick. And so there's, reason to be optimistic about it.
Yeah, we've been burnt in the past, drafting corners. Years of it. Oh, yeah, we'll have another one. But they've always been late round prospects. A lot of sort of potential that we've been drafting. But it sounds like all the stuff that I'm hearing about this guy is that he's actually a bit more ready to go. Darren, is that how you see it?
Yeah, for a round 4 pick, I think he's a really good pick. He's probably one of the oldest players coming out of the draft, not only because of the COVID years, but because he took 2 years out after high school. He basically went off and I think he wanted to go off and be an e-gamer in esports. That's where he took 2 years and then came back The height, 6'4", I think he is, or what I read is 6'4", but 6'3", 6'4", he's quite tall for a corner, which in a weird way is a bit of a concern, because when you get that those shorter, stockier wide receivers that are starting to become a bit more of a thing, how you deal with a shorter wide receiver when you're that high is different. But again, I think it's fit. Fit for a B-flow system is what makes him good. I think his physical attributes. I read somewhere that I think from all of in terms of all quarterback passes in his coverage, more than one in four were either intercepted or batted down. So I mean, the guy's got pedigree. So yeah, I think for a round four pick. He looks like he's a good fit for a B-flow system. So, he'll be down in the box and making tackles, which is he's got those physical attributes to do. So, yeah, I think he's a good pick. We'll see. The height's a little concern, as I say, but all round, I'm happy with that pick.
Well, I'll lean on you two guys' knowledge and I'll be happy myself because, like I say, everything that I read about him seems to be really positive, that he's a bit more day one starter. And it is, Reese, exactly like you said, allows us to shift people around and allows us to be a bit more, let's say, balanced in the secondary, which we were guilty last year of not looking so balanced and not looking so sharp. So, yeah, really great to have him in. And then pick 177 rolls around and we take Walter Rouse, the tackle out of Oklahoma, which, again, I am not going to profess to know anything about. I've done a little bit of reading. Again, sounds like someone we've done our homework on. Reese, you know anything about him?
What was the thing that we were arguing over quite a bit when it came to an offensive lineman? It was, do you want to prioritize the pass blocking or the run blocking? This is a guy who his run blocking is ahead of his pass blocking. Of course, he's a tackle. I doubt we slide him inside to guard. He's 6'6". A 6'6" guard would be an absolute nightmare to try and throw over. I mean, you'd be throwing it through his legs if you were Kyler Murray. It's that sort of thing. So as a pick, he had that 5-6 grade. But we got him in sixth, you know. So if you're, 5-6 grade, you got him on schedule where you thought he might be taken. Yeah, excels more in the run side. That's what I picked up. I had to do quite a bit of reading. Yeah, when it comes to these much later picks, there are some that I knew of before, but offensive linemen in the late rounds, that's not something you study too much before the draft because anyone could go.
Yeah, it is a bit niche. I do like the vision that you've put in my mind of Kyler Murray throwing underarm through a 6'6" defensive tackle's legs. I think that'd be the best thing I've ever seen. But yeah, it sort of makes sense. I think on a 17, 18 game season that it could be in the future, you're going to need some backup. You're going to need some depth on that O-line. And we've seen it, we've seen Achilles pops and calf pops and all sorts of stuff and having to shift people around. It just makes sense. And I think having some depth in those positions just helps us, really. It makes us a better team on offense. And again, going by next best player, if the front office believe in him and believe that he was the right person to take at that time, after the first round, you've just got to believe in Kwesi these days. You've just got to say, yeah, that's a good enough pick for me. And then something unspeakable happened. We drafted a kicker, which I have seen. I've seen some almost like death threats come through. How dare anyone draft a kicker in round six of the NFL draft when you could just wait and get them for nothing at the end? I mean, at the end of the day, he is an elite college kicker. And that's the reason that we go and get him, because we have had problems at the kicking position.
Will Reichard out of Alabama. The thing that I like about the pick, I don't like taking pickers in the draft. Unless you're going to take Justin Tucker and, this guy is generational. Don't do it. Because to me, it feels like you've reached to get a guy in rather than, you've reached to get a guy, but not as an undrafted free agent. You wanted to make sure you were the ones that got him. But we've got a kicker that's, we're gonna have a kicking competition. It's probably going to be undrafted free agents coming in on top of this. So a pick value for pick, I don't get. But Alabama, big school pedigree, a school where there is naturally pressure on every single guy who steps on the field. So he can deal with pressure, and you need that in the NFL. Over the last 4 years, he's hit 95% of his kicks under 40 yards. That's where we struggle with Joseph. You could line him up for a 50 yarder and he might hit it, but somehow you got nervous when it got inside 40. This is a guy who's more of that Nick Folk model. He doesn't have the biggest leg, but he's going to be accurate from the short distances, and he's not going to, when you should be putting points up on the board, he's not going to leave you short should he win the kicker competition in camp.
Darren, is he a reach? Who's right here?
Most people would argue that, you know, as Reece says, you don't take a kicker. You just don't draft them. You just pick them. Most, you know, probably a better model is looking for those kickers that play professionally, albeit not in the NFL, but play in the XFL or the CFL, playing professionally for that, you know. So, and you don't have to waste your pick on it. So I can see why people are mad. The fact that he's from Alabama, his stats are great. He has even started hit, you know, recently started showing that he can hit those 50, 55 yarders as well. So, but he's accurate. Kicks under pressure. Alabama's probably one of the biggest pressure kegs in college football. So that can't be a stat. And, you know, there are kickers, you know, you look at Daniel Carlson, that was a pick. If we'd stuck with it, that would have been, you know, potentially he'd probably still be playing for us now. So you can win, you get the Tuckers of this world, and if he turns out to be great, then no one's going to worry about it. But it does seem like a bit of a reach to me. I don't personally understand it, but, you know, sometimes why not have a go and see.
Sometimes as well, I think it's not just about the player you draft. It's about the players that are left on the board. You know, if your board was saying 6 or 7 players at this stage of the draft and they've all gone, you know, we know we've needed a kicker because Greg the Leg's gone to Green Bay, and I hope he's terrible. But we know that we needed someone in to come and do a job, and we know that he is a really great kicker from his college stats. So it doesn't... don't draft a kicker nonsense. I don't buy it. I think Kwesi is identifying spots in the team where he wants talent, and he's spotted that talent and he's gone and got him. I don't mind that. If that's what he believes, it's around 6. It's no pressure. You know, at this time in the draft that you're really drafting potential. You're looking at players that have, you know, a decent amount of potential that you believe you can coach into playing in the NFL. And you know, I don't think he's going to take much coaching, this boy. I think he's going to come in and be able to kick from the off, which is something that we need. So I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. John, what do you think? Taking a kicker in round 6? Is that the right thing to do?
Normally, I would be against it. But when you look at it, how many points a kicker gets you in a game, having a good kicker is always worth it. If he turns out to be something like a Justin Tucker, that would be worth it. Let's face it, it's a lowish pick. We're not giving up a first or a second or a third or whatever for this guy. His record in college is absolutely amazing. He's one of the best kickers in college I've seen for nearly a decade since Tucker left, or God knows when. But yeah, having a great kicker is always a good quiver to the arrow. And well, let's face it, the Vikings haven't had a good kicker in many, many years.
I don't think it's just that. Every time we get a good kicker, we turn him into a bad kicker. That's the problem.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, thanks for that, John. I totally agree. I think... It's not like we've wasted a pick, I don't think. When you start to get into that back end, you're either taking a punt on some potential, or, as we've done, you've taken the best player in his position for potentially a decade of college football. So, yeah, I don't mind it. I think it makes total sense to me. Now, we've got to round six, and we could talk about the rest of the players and the undrafted free agents that we've managed to sign already, but I think the proof will be in the pudding with them guys. So I think, really, we have to say now that that is our recap of the draft. Like I say, I'm absolutely knackered now, but I have really enjoyed myself these past few days, seeing how the shape of the franchise is coming together, seeing who we've got. I still think that we won round one. The Bears got some couple of good players. I was really high on Roma Donzo, so I hope he isn't as good as what I thought he was going to be ongoing. But yeah, to come out the way we did at round one, I think is just really, really good GM play. So hats off to Kwesi, hats off to the guys in the building, and we'll just see how it all pans out. But next week we have got a special guest coming towards us. Reese, who's going to come speak to us next week? Our lowly little podcast.
Well, you call us a little podcast. We try and be more than a little podcast, Rich. And so we try and pull in some guests here and there when we can. Those who went to the meetups in Manchester where Jake Reed was, or you know, the London meetup with Sydney Rice, they'll know who this guy is. It's George on Sports. You can't miss him. He's on every, you know, he does great stuff. He does, you know, a recent team up with Fanatics, which we can always grill him about why our jerseys come in the wrong color or with the wrong team. No, it's not anything to do with George, that, no. But what you will get from George is some great punditry on the podcast, which, you know, we try and give you. But no, this guy is just top tier. You know, we're really excited to have George on, and we're really excited for you all to hear that come out.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to him making me sound rubbish, because he is proper next level. You know, he knows his stuff, and he's well invested in the NFL. So I'm looking forward to speaking to him, because he's going to teach me some stuff. He's going to teach us some stuff, and he's quite a big name for us to get on the show, our little podcast. We managed to get Darren on this week, which was a mean feat, but getting a caliber of guest that high on next week is going to be a bit of a coup for our podcast. So well done, Reese, on getting that on. So I suppose the only thing I've got to do now is say, are you going to come back next week, and are you going to join me and speak to him?
Of course I'm going to be there.
And John, you're going to come back with us as well. And then the absolute last thing that we've got to say is goodbye, gentlemen.
Goodbye, gentlemen.
Goodbye, gentlemen.
Goodbye, gentlemen.
And that wraps it up. So thanks for listening. Thanks for being with us. And we'll see you next week. Cheers. Ta-ra.